Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3, for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 4, delivered on February 1, 2017. The title of this lecture is Introduction to Financial Statements.
Today, Introduction to Financial Statements. This is a first pass. We'll do this over and over again through the semester. But there are a few high points, if you will, and actually some low points too in this. You're joking me, really? Okay. And this might spill over a little into the lecture for next week on Monday, so I'll extend the homework quiz and test for Chapter 2 by about 4 days, unless you want it before you've seen everything, just to give you more time on this. Still trying to recover from that lost first day. Let me turn this on. In your Business 100 course, you were introduced, or at least you were supposed to be introduced, to the resources that are available online for business purposes. Now, one that is kind of just sort of shown to you as one of the many that are out there are the resources of the Securities and Exchange Commission. They have a system of electronic reporting called EDGAR. Now, let me tell you about the history of this. Companies that are public have to report to the SEC. When they become public, they are subject to the Securities Act of 1933. After they are public, they have to repeatedly, on a continuing basis, report to the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's the way it's been for a long, long time, for decades and decades. And these are grueling reports. I mean, just when I was in consulting, one of the ways that I made money as a consultant was to prepare all of these information documents that the SEC required. They were paper documents, and I was ahead of the curve as far as computers went. Even in the early 1980s, I was using something called a laptop, which was awesome, a Toshiba thing. And I could there were some word processing programs around then, so I didn't have to type things out and make a mistake, use whiteout and all that. I could actually prepare them on a word processor. And so I got an edge up on most people at the time, and so I could prepare these documents for small companies, charge them a good price because it would have cost them a fortune to have gone to lawyers. Ultimately, what happened was lawyers and accountants got the government to make it illegal for anyone but them to prepare these documents. But back in that time, I could do it. Some of these were just ridiculous, just disclosures over and over again. All the financial statements, and if it was a bigger public company, it had to have audited financial statements and all that. So then something interesting came along with the SEC in the mid to late 1980s, and I can't remember exactly what year it was, SEC started experimenting with an electronic way to communicate documents. They would essentially, instead of typing out this big, huge document, you would file the report electronically, and everything that you did had these tags on it. It was called standard generalized markup. It was a precursor and the grandfather of HTML, which is how later web pages would be made. But anyway, and I was one of the first registered Edgar filing agents. I could actually create these documents electronically and then transfer them to the SEC by a mode called File Transfer Protocol, FTP, that would later be replaced largely on the internet that was developing by HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol. Never mind all that. It was an electronic way to communicate documents to the SEC, and it was awesome. I could make a lot of money a lot faster than I used to, than I had when I had to type them out all by hand, print them, and then make them in triplicate and send them to the SEC. This way, it was all electronic. Well, it took hold, and eventually it got to be the standard. And finally, the SEC said all companies must file electronically. And so Edgar filing agents were making a good amount of money. And then, of course, the SEC and the SEC were convinced by lawyers and accountants that no one could do filings electronically except for lawyers and accountants and their lackeys. So there you go. That ended that one. But anyway, now it's all electronic through the SEC. And this is called the Edgar filing system. Now, I don't know how extensively they showed you this in Business 100. I spent time with it. Some of you probably in your classes probably spent less time, some more time. But one way or the other, you've seen the Edgar filing system. Now, let me explain how it works. It's essentially you can type in the name of a company, or better, the trading symbol of the company, and up will pop all of these documents that you can look at. Now, the big 800-pound gorillas, companies have to report every quarter on Form 10-Q. They're quarterly. Now, this has a lot of information in it that's in narrative format. And then it has financial information, financial statements and supplemental tables and all of that great stuff. And then it has some other information in it as well. Now, these 10-Qs, at the end of a company's fiscal year, it files a Form 10-K, which is the annual version of the Qs. We call these the Qs and Ks. These are original source documents of a company. Now, a company, interestingly enough, in my experience, almost all companies are very honest in these documents, to the point where if you actually read into these, and it's like books, one of these is like a book. If you read, though, they can be glib. I mean, they'll just be very honest about things that are going on in the company. This is incredibly useful to you. You're going to have a lot of courses. I don't know if a lot, of course, but you're going to definitely have some memorable courses where you're going to have professors who say, well, you need to find this out about the company or that about the company and all this. You can go to these original source documents, these K's and Q's, and you can get it from the horse's mouth. Here's the deal. Companies have a lot of incentive to tell the truth in these documents. Not because the SEC is going to be reading all of them. The SEC, in my experience, hardly ever even looks at these unless there is some other reason why they look at these. But investors look at these. Monster fund management companies look at these. They pick them apart. As soon as this thing pops up on Edgar, there is a descending force of analysts looking at these documents to find out what's in them, to see if there's any hints or anything that could be used. If you are reading one of these documents 48 hours after it's been published, you're not going to get any trading information out of it. You're going to get great information for academic papers, but the traders will already have gone through it. And they will have gotten anything out of it that's worth trading on. So don't think you're going to be a genius. Read these 10 years back, or even a year, or even a couple of days back, and get much out of them for buying and selling stocks and bonds and all that. But they are powerful documents. The K's and Q's. Now, companies file all kinds of other things, too. One that was a favorite of mine. These are recurring. Let me point this out. Q's and K's are recurring information products. And they are information products for a variety of constituencies. Information is commodity, and the commodity is consumed by different groups. Groups within the company will consume information products. External users, the government, agencies, unions, investors, special interest groups, are all consumers of these information products. That's what accountants produce, is information products for certain classes of information consuming constituencies. In finance, a lot of what we do is produce information products for different constituencies. But these are recurring information products. They're produced every quarter for the Qs, annual for the Ks. Now, there are other ones too, though, that you'll find in the list of Edgar documents. I'm going to show you some Edgar stuff here in a minute. There is, for example, the Form 8K. This is something, I made a lot of money off this back in the consulting days in the 80s and 90s. This is a report that is issued for non-recurring events. You had to file one of these every time something of importance happened in a company that wasn't recurring. So in other words, if, for example, you, sir, were the president of a public company and you got sucked up into an alien mothership and taken away to the Andromeda Galaxy, we would file an 8K. That's an important event. If you are the chief financial officer and you suddenly die from internal combustion, you know, you just flame up and die and you're just ashes there, we would file an 8K on that. First, we'd probably be sad, and then wonder what the hell had happened. Turned out it was that tequila. It was a little bit higher proof than I was expecting. My bad, you know. I'm sad the worm died too, but there you go. Okay, but anyway, that's an 8K. And I mean, here's what would happen. I have these little companies. They were pump and dump. There were a lot of them were scams. And what they would do is when it came time for the company president or the officers or the directors, they wanted to unload some of their inside stock and they had some trick way to do it. What they'd do is they'd issue some kind of press release bragging about something that they were going to do. And I would do some press releases. I had connections with decent information services, but a lot of this was just bullshit and I wouldn't let them do it. But they would get them out behind my back or with my approval, whatever. And every time they issued one of these press releases, I had to file a Form 8K that there was a press release. Now, the whole point of these press releases was to cause the stock price to go up briefly, and then they could dump their stock. That's the pump and dump. And then, of course, the stock would fall, collapse in price because of all of the selling, and everyone figured out that it was crap that they were saying. There wasn't any truth at all to it. But you know, there you go. Every time they had an 8K, I mean, for me, when Edgar was there, I just file it electronically. It was like 2 minutes, and I would push the button and up and go to Edgar, and I'd bill them $75 for it. And they'd just have, what do you mean $75? Well, you were the ones who wanted to have a press release. What was that, the third this month? And so anyway, 8Ks can be for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes you will... An 8K can happen for a death of an important person in the company, for a press release, for an appointment of someone to a position, a very high position, a lot of different reasons. One thing that was kind of a difficulty in my time, I was sometimes confronted with, well, is they just called me and told me something. Is this important enough for an 8K? Now, my general reaction, although I was definitely making money if I did it, my reaction was, if in doubt, file the 8K and then bill them $75 and have your own moral qualms in the, after work. But anyway, there you go. So, and then there are all kinds of other ones. You keep an eye out because when a company starts buying stock of another company, building a position, after a certain threshold of percentage ownership, They have to file a form for that. Form has to be filed when insiders sell their stock. Well, that's okay. It's not a bad sign per se if an insider sells stock. I mean, my God, some of these smaller companies, the only way the officers and directors can make any money is if they sell some of their stock. Now, their stock is restricted by what is called Rule 144. The SEC sets down these rules that say, all right, only at certain times and in certain amounts and under certain approval conditions from outside legal from your legal counsel can you sell stock. But if they do sell stock, that insider trade is noted on as a form that is filed with the SEC. Now, what I'm going to do here is, without further ado, I'm going to actually show you the the forms of a company, and then I'm going to take you to the financials and make a couple of quick points about financial statements. And again, I'm going to spill this one in quite deliberately into the next lecture because this is one of the things that we do in finance, is break down financial statements. Now remember, financial statements are, what the hell was that? God almighty. Was that a duck fart? Okay, so I lost my train of thought, man. What was I about? One way or the other. Okay, let me. I swear. Okay, let me take a tab here. And I'm going to go www.sec.gov. This is the way I can't remember things so well. So what I do is I go this way, and then I go to filings. Edgar search tools. You can do it that way, or if you want to get a little bit more direct, just company filing search. Okay, so now you can type in the name of the company to get to its financials. Be careful about doing this because sometimes you'll type in a company name and you'll find out there are like 10, 20 companies that are listed that are available to you. Or you'll find out that one company actually has all these different subsidiaries of the same name. And hunting your way back to the parent, well, that might be difficult, but it might not even be the parent you want. It might be one of the subsidiaries you're thinking of. Sears is a great example of that. You type in Sears and you're going to get a whole list of things. It's better if you have the trading symbol. And there are plenty of places you can find trading symbols, like, for example, Yahoo Finance has trading. You can find the trading symbols. I'm going to do Netflix. And I know its trading symbol is NFLX. NFLX. Yeah, and I went right to, look at this. Oh, spank me. They're at 10K. Sometimes the 10K is way down there because their year ended quite a while back. Now, if you have a chance to do a Q or a K, go with the Q because that's the consolidated information for a whole fiscal year. The problem is that the fiscal year might have been quite a while back. However, here, let me look at this. First of all, first things first, documents. This is where we're going to go, finally. But documents. I want you to see a 10-K. Now, these are all exhibits within the 10-K itself, but here is the animal. These are what we used to type. And now, let me go through. This is a 10-K. It's a friggin' book. Look at this. We used to do this for decades by hand. And I would charge a fortune for this. But what the secret was that in the early days, back when word processors were not known to as many people, the big powerhouse was a word processor called WordPerfect. It was excellent. And Microsoft broke the law to destroy WordPerfect as the premier word processor. It was just an open, blatant violation of the Clayton Act, the antitrust Clayton Act. But there you go. But WordPerfect, I could create basically a template. And once I had a company set up, it was more or less just a matter of keeping the basic outline and then going in and inserting parts that had to be built from one time to the next. But I'll tell you right now, here is all the information. Now remember that this is filed with the government, so you're probably going to see the truth. If they are lying, they are doing so with one of two motivations. One is that they are lying mofos, or they are lying with the permission of the government. This is what happened with the 10 largest banks in the world. They were actually lying on their financial statements. They were lying about how bad, they were in horrible shape. The financials showed how horrible their shape was. But what was not shown in the financial, in these 10Ks the banks were filing, was that the Fed was shoveling money in the back door of these banks. The SEC knew it was going on. The Treasury Department knew it was going on. The Federal Reserve was the one doing it. And we who were outside information consumers, analyzing these for investment, buy, sell, hold, what we saw was a complete lie. We saw companies that were dying, banks that were on the verge of bankruptcy at any given hour, not even any given day, at any given hour. But that was a lie. They were actually doing quite well because of all this massive financial, this infusion of money that was going in the back door. And so a lot of financial advisors were destroyed by this. They were advising to sell. I was advising to sell. We were warning to sell, go short on the whole economy because we knew if these banks failed, the whole world was going to collapse. Didn't happen. We couldn't figure out why. It turned out it was because our resource was a lie. Now, for the most part, that's not what's happening. Almost always, the SEC is scrutinizing these companies very carefully. But what I want to point out is, this is going to be the legal name of the company right here. This is going to be its address right here. So if you're looking for basic information about a company, you can't go wrong going to the 10K. Because if the SEC, if you lie to the government, and you're not, and they aren't giving you permission to lie, they will make you some hard-timer's old lady at a federal facility. Well, for the guys. For the girls, it's different. But anyway, okay, this, look at this thing. It's just a beast. Now, there's something that I do want to show you in here, if I can find it. Table of content. Risk factors. I mean, all this stuff that you're going to be asked in these classes you take, in marketing classes, management science classes, they're going to say, well, we got a project and you have to find the risk factors of this company, or you have to find the things that are going on right now, what the company's projections are. Okay, I'm looking for the MD&A, the management discussion and analysis. Let me do it this way. Seriously? Control F doesn't work in Chrome. Oh, there it is. Okay. It's on the other side. Management discussion. Did it find anything? Oh, you mean upstairs here? Item 7, there it is. You see this thing? This is where they, the people who write this, who are usually attorneys hired by the company or they're insiders in the company tasked to do this, they are honest. They are brutal. They tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly. As I use the term glib, that means quite appallingly honest. You have to read the tea leaves. Sometimes the language doesn't quite convey what you might think. This is not a place where amateurs should start. And you're going to be all pros. You're going to be professionals in one place or another in business world. This is where you have to learn our language. Now, some years back, I was in a war with others. The SEC had fielded a proposal to require that all financial documents like these 10Ks had to be written in plain English. And there were a lot of people who said, oh, that's great. Everyone's going to be able to read instead of this legalese and financialese and economicsese. It'll all be in normal people's language. I was opposed to that. And it made me sound like I was some kind of an elitist. But the reason I was opposed was, and I explained this in the hearing, the SEC's hearing, I said, no, I don't want Ma and Pa Kettle thinking that they can read these documents. And worse yet, thinking that they can make investment decisions just because they happen to find one of these documents somewhere. This is a disaster waiting to happen when you make people believe that the complex is simple. Make people believe that plain language is in everyone's interest. That fantasy we have that normal people, common people without education, can fly jets, can decide financial matters, can run countries. Now, give it a break. We don't need that. Unfortunately, I lost that battle. And to this day, we still have people who are not properly trained and educated going to these documents and thinking they understand. When you read these as professionals. You appreciate the fact that you aren't common people and that your expectation of what you'll find there is not a normal human being's perception. Read it. It's tea leaves, yeah, but you know how to read. You're starting to learn critical thinking skills far beyond the normal person. So you read these, look at them, and all that good stuff. Now I'm going to back away from this guy, and I'm going to take you out back here. Now this is where you get the big animal. But back here, you can actually get just the financials, all of them. Now let me show you something interesting, something fun. Is there some reason this sucks? Oh, okay. Do you see up here, you can actually get all of their financials. And I'm talking about financials that you haven't even seen in your accounting courses yet. You can get it all as a downloadable Excel spreadsheets. And then you can do whatever you want with them. Make your charts for your reports, for your classes and all of that. Look at this. Did that actually download that fast? Okay. Now I want you to look. Okay. This is some consolidated statements of operations. That's a fancy way of saying income statements. Consolidated, that's a quickie of what's below the income statement, that information. There's some other information. Oh, gee, what is this? This is a statement of changes in return, or the statement of cash flow, statement of changes. That's sources and uses statement, some of you have learned. Oh, well, look at this. This is your balance sheet, all nice and pretty laid out for you. The one thing that I don't like anymore is that the SEC, and this happened after my time, but you used to get 5 years of financials and 3 years of balance sheets, income statements and 3 years of balance sheets. Now you get 3 years of income statements and only 2 years of balance sheets. So you don't get as much ability to look at changes from period to period. But nevertheless, look at this. All of this information is there for you. Lists of the types of stock and the amounts of stock they have. All of this right there for you to look at. Sometimes they go a little overboard. Now, I want to go back here. Big warning to you. Big warning. I was looking for the consolidated statements of statements of operation. Okay, now, the ones that you usually think the most about are the income statement and the balance sheet. After that, maybe the statement of retained earnings, the sources and uses. The statement of cash flow is a biggie for us in finance because that takes a lot of the non-cash flow items out. But a caution to you is that there is actually not a very strong standard for what entries are called. So you might have a company like this one, Netflix, calls it revenue. Another company might call it sales. Back in the day, we used to take revenue minus cost of goods sold, and have a line in here called your gross income. They aren't required to do this anymore. That's actually very important to us in finance because gross income is basically, I'll explain that in a minute. But I want to warn you, though, watch it because there can be different names for the same thing depending upon the company. and it just drives me up a wall. Like, for example, operating income is all your revenue minus all of your operating costs. The other way that that can be, the other name for that is earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT. Now, I'm just kind of curious, if you took an accounting course, did they call it operating income or earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT? Do you remember? You said operating income. Okay. Now, in finance, we are much more likely to call it EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. It's the same thing. So watch it. If you hear me say EBIT, that's just saying operating income. And sometimes you'll hear me use the word gross. That's gross margin, revenue minus cost of revenue. You'll hear me say op or operating. That's operating income, EBIT. Okay? You'll hear me say net. Almost always, if I say net, that's net income, okay? Just know these. Another term for net income you'll see is net profit or profit. I mean, the SEC doesn't seem, I mean, my God, back in the day, they told us, you will use this name, this name, this name. And now it's like, it's very loose how they do it. So there you go. The importance of this, I can't emphasize enough that you've got all your financial information to make reports, to make charts and all that. You can just download it right from, every company has to make it available in Excel spreadsheet format. Every public company has to make it so that anyone with the necessary skill sets can fully and completely analyze the company's financial statements. Okay? And also, just a quick note here. There's a financial statement that most people don't think about, and it's not really taught as an important financial, it's not taught as a critical financial statement. Usually your main ones are the income statement and the balance sheet, and then your statement of cash flows. Those are the biggies. The one that is oftentimes kind of overlooked is the notes to the financial statement. Because in the notes to the financial statement, they explain the numbers. And sometimes in those explanations is where you see things that will drop your jaw. They will explain where a cost came from. And then when you, it'll just, in the financials, you'll just say, oh, here's the cost, and you might, ah. Then you look at the notes of the financial statement and you say, what the frig was that? I was taught the power of these. When I was doing consulting, I helped companies become public. Part of that was making initial filings with the SEC. But there was also the other part of it, which was getting a trading symbol. Now, almost all the work I ever did was with the OTC, the over-the-counter market, the NASD, the NASDAQ, and all that. Only twice did I ever get or try to get a listing on the AMEX. Most of my work was to get the four-letter trading symbols of NASD companies. That did not go through the SEC. That went through the self-policing organization called the National Association of Securities Dealers. And I would have to go to them to get a trading symbol. And to go to them, I had to go through compliance. I filed a form called the 15C211. I filed with them the financial statements audited of the company. Then their compliance officers would review it to decide whether this company deserved a trading symbol. Unfortunately, I was assigned for my clients a compliance officer. Her name was Claire. She was old. She was mean as dirt. She had no respect for anyone. She was an absolute bitch. And I learned to love that woman. She made my life hell. But what she also did was she taught me how to be good. She taught me how to write information. She said, all right, you're going to lie in these financial statements. I can tell you are. No, I'm not. Don't lie to me, you little fat boy. Okay, yes, ma'am. And no, seriously, she would just talk horribly to me. But then she said, Now I'm going to tell you how you handle this. You get in those notes to the financial statement is where you explain where those numbers came from. Because you've obviously done these in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied. So you're not going to get in trouble there. But if this company goes to hell, your investors are going to sue you back to the Stone Age. Unless you can say, in the notes, I told you what was happening. And so she taught me to use the notes like a weapon against anyone who would come back on me or that company later. That's why you remember that if they are smart, a company is going to hire note writers. The notes to the financial statements are going to be written by accountants working with financial people in the company so that their butts are covered. And that's where you can pick up the covers and look under them and you'll hear, ee! And you'll put them back down. Okay, remember this. I can't emphasize this enough. I'm not teaching you this because it's in the book. I'm teaching this because I'm good at what I do and what I did back then, notwithstanding the places I can't go because they still would arrest me if I went there. But they can kiss my ass. I'm safe. Okay, enough of that. These are the notes. Now, I'll go back and show you some things about it. Now, I'm going to take you someplace else for a while. I'm going to take you over to Yahoo Finance. Finance.yahoo.com. And I'm going to teach you how to read the screens. God, even here I see a bunch of creeps. Anyway. Yeah, Zuckerberg kissed my ass. Okay, anyway, look, let me show you what's going on here. These sites like Google Finance and Yahoo Finance, you can click on the sidebar and get the financial statements. Don't do it. First of all they're going to be doing is aggregating from Edgar. They have these spiders that go to Edgar, bring back the financial information. You can go to the source. Second, you will find that there are blanks where the spiders don't get it. There's something odd. I've seen it over and over again. When I would go and look at financial statements in Yahoo Finance, here's the income statement. And I go in there and I'd see one entry always, I remember this one very well. But quite often you see a company interest expense, there would just be two dashes there. In other words, they don't have any debt, they're not paying any interest. And it struck me, now wait a minute, I know this company has debt outstanding. And I'd go to the Edgar financial statement, sure enough, there'd be a big fat number there. And it's just a thing. Sometimes there are certain glitches in these spiders, they don't pick up a few numbers. And then you're sitting there thinking you have authoritative information, you don't. You could have gotten it from the Edgar filing system instead of going here. However, there is information that's worth you looking at, no doubt about it, here. Now, what I'm going to do, that'll really blow the mic off the podcast, NFLX. I'm going to start teaching you how to read the screens. Whoa, hey, there's a big number. See that right there? That is $140.78 a share for this stock. Now, typically, you will buy a round lot. That's 100 shares. If you buy an odd lot, that will cost you more on average than buying a round lot. And you will find that oftentimes, if you put in an order, it is assumed that you are giving an order for a round lot. Okay? So here, this is a lot of money for a round lot. Here's another one. Now, I can't remember this stupid new Goog, Alphabet Inc. Okay. There, $975.70 a share. So in other words, if you bought a round lot, it would cost you $79,570 plus broker's fees. Now, I've checked under the seat of my car, and I just don't have that much money. These are very expensive stocks. So we're going to look at Netflix here. Couple of things. First of all, this was the price when the bell rang this morning on the exchange. Oh, I should mention this. See that NFLX, four letters? That's an NASD stock. Okay, that's a NASDAQ stock. Three letters, two letters, those are the more reputable. NASD is a place where a lot of cheapo special companies, higher risk companies, but there are a lot of reputable companies on the NASD too. They could go to the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE, or the AMEX. They don't. They just stay here on the NASD. I believe Microsoft is on the NASD. MSFT. So this is, so just a quick thing. Now, bid and ask. The bid is what you're going to pay. The ask is what you're going to sell it for. No, wait. The bid is what you're going to ask. No, the ask is what you're going to sell it for. The bid is what you're going... I'm not saying that right. I should not have taken crack this morning. Okay. You're going to pay the ask, and you're going to sell at the bid. Okay? Watch it. You think that... Be careful about that, because when you buy, you're already in the hole two ways. One, you're in the hole because you bought at the ask, and when you sell it, you're going to sell at the bid. The other reason you're in the hole is because you're going to pay the broker's fees. So if you think, well, I'm going to make a couple of bucks today, well, you better overcome a couple of things to do that, especially if you're a small investor. And that's one of the things I need to point out to you over and over again. You are not large investors. You are going to be at the basement level of the multi-story outhouse when it comes to everything. If you think, well, Facebook is having an IPO, I'm going to get involved in that IPO and I'm going to make myself a fortune on the IPO. No, you're not. You're not going to get that stock when it comes out of the gate. You will not be a buyer in the primary market. You will be a buyer in the secondary market. Here's how it's going to work. Okay, you are a very rich, powerful fund manager. I'm going to make sure that you get primary issue Facebook. Okay? And then once that stock, Facebook, actually, I'm going to buy the stock as the investment banker, and then I'm going to transfer some to you into your account and take some money out of your account. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to pump that stock, pump, 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 pump. And then I'm going to have one of my lackeys, one of those hoe handles down there in the boiler room, call you. Ma'am, I just got myself, you heard about that Facebook offering? I got some. You in? Of course you are, okay? What can I put you down for? 10 round lots? Yeah, you got that? I've been looking at your account. You got that, and you're, we believe in you. I know you're a sophisticated kind of lady, okay? So we're going to take care of you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to unload from my big dogs upstairs. They're going to tell the boiler room boys to get rid of that stock of yours once we get it up to maybe $60, $70 a share, and you're going to buy it at 65. Tell you what, I'm going to make a deal with you, 63 a share on this right now. Okay, yeah. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to get it onto your shoulders and get it off yours because you've made the massive gain on the primary market, but you. You're a secondary market because this is no longer Facebook. This is just a trade between two ordinary people. Ordinary. Ordinary. Okay? Do you follow what's going on in this? Does this sound unethical? Who cares? Welcome to the real world. God, do-gooders. Yeah, it does suck. Welcome, like I said, though, welcome to business. Look, now, the day's range. This is the swing in the stock. You've got to remember that dollar numbers matter only to your wallet. In terms of analysis, all that matters is percentage change. A dollar movement of a $10 stock is a heck of a lot different from a dollar movement of a $100 stock. So when I see a price swing on Netflix here, what have I got a price swing on it of? $3 and change on a $140 stock, that's not much of a swing. Actually, I shouldn't say that. That's actually kind of, I don't know, one way or the other. Okay, now, 52-week range from $79.95 to $143.46. Okay, tell me, are we near the top or the bottom to in the trading right now? What you're looking at there, are we in the top or the bottom of the 52-week range on this stock? Talk to me. Yeah, you're near the top. So is that good news or is that bad news? I would be worried because I would want to see if it's going to break that 52-week neckline. If it doesn't break it, it's testing it right now. I want to see if it's going to break that neckline. If it doesn't break that neckline with two or three tries, I'm going to start shorting that stock. I'm going to unload some of it, rebalance my portfolio away from it. The second thing I want to make sure you understand is that if you buy single stocks, if you do not buy portfolios of stock, you are a very stupid person. You buy a single stock, you are bearing a ton of risk that you don't need to have, because that's what portfolio diversification is all about. A lot of the volatility of any given single stock is volatility that will go away in a diversified portfolio. Therefore, you're not going to have any market reward you for bearing that risk, because that is stupid risk that you're bearing. That is risk that you can get rid of, so you don't deserve anything for it. And if you lose your shirt, oh, sure. Now, you might hear, I can guarantee you that on these financial news networks and places like that, I have bought one stock and I've made myself a fortune off that stock. I don't need to listen to these professors and these intelligent people. I bought one stock. I just had a gut feeling about it. I can't. One night this angel came to me. Angel was just floating down there. Of course, I've been drinking awful heavy, and I took some pill that some lady gave me. And that angel said, "You buy this stock," and I bought that stock and I made a fortune. Now I'm going to tell you how to do that. See, for every person who actually makes a fortune playing that game, there are going to be 10,000, hell, 100,000 idiots who got their clocks cleaned doing the same thing. We won't hear from them. You're not going to hear from the guy, "Hi, I got my ass kicked, and I'll tell you how to do the same thing." They're not going to do it. You're going to get a selective bias against it. We know this. Matter of fact, we have figured out economic theory uses what's called utility maximization. We know that that is correct for almost everything humans do, except for gambling. And stock markets are gambling. In stock markets, we've figured out that it's not utility theory that works. It's a very specialized new theory we've just figured out in recent years called prospect theory. When you are losing, you will dig in and keep playing. When you win, you back out. So we will see a bias toward losers who will always be looking at the winners. I could be a winner like that person. Even though I have been at the craps table for the last 48 hours and my eyes are bloodshot, I saw a guy win big here and he walked out the door, so I'm going to keep losing until I win. Trust me on this. I mean, in the stock market, that's the way you play people. They lose, they come back, they keep playing. It's a gamble just like at the casinos, just like at the Sands. I saw these people doing this thing in Vegas. They would lose and they would just keep playing and lose and keep playing. It was the winners who would cut their sometimes they would play, they would put, the smart ones, they'd win big and they'd put 20% of it back on the table, 80% in their pocket. But most investors are too stupid and they will listen to the winners who just got lucky. These geniuses of Wall Street, for the most part, is a combination of sheer luck and market power. A man like Warren Buffett, he wins because he is a force of nature. He wins because everyone expects him to win. And then there are those I met, lots of guys, they made their fortune on a lucky bet and just got lucky, and then they're suddenly geniuses. Okay, let me take you down here. Volume. Now, what they're saying here, volume is actually on balance volume, OBV. On balance volume is what you see on the books. There is volume that happens in the back room. And that's a little harder to find what's trading in the back room. But you look at the on balance volume and you look at this number right here to see if there's any abnormality in the amount of it. Okay? And then we go down here, the average volume. You say, okay, well, volume today is a little weak. Interesting. Market cap, a very important number. The market cap is nothing but the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. The price per share times the number of shares outstanding. This is the market's assessment, of the value to the owners of this company. The market's assessment of the value to the owners of this company. This is a number that is going to be almost never the book value of the equity on the balance sheet. Book value means nothing. Book value means nothing. All that matters is what the market says. All that matters is what the market says. When you went to school, you were not popular. The kid said, there he is, the nerd with the glasses. You were scrawny. They'd say, you're ugly. But when you went home, mom told you you were beautiful. She'd sing to you, you are so beautiful to me. Now who matters? Mom. No, because those kids out there are going to kick your ass. She's always going to have the same value of you. You can come home with those pipes sticking out of your face, singing about, talking about Breaking Bad. She'd still believe in you. Those kids know differently. You understand what I'm trying to say to you. The market is what matters, not what those accounting statements say is the value of that stock. It's what the market says. Book value is irrelevant. The next one is beta. Beta is a measure of the risk of this stock in a well-diversified portfolio. If you held Netflix on its own, it would be far riskier than it is in a diversified portfolio. Now, we're going to talk a lot about beta in this class, a lot. And I expose you, and you probably have already figured this out. I'm showing you things, and I just keep going back over them. As the course goes along, I just keep layering it on you. Here's your first introduction to one of the most important single numbers in finance, beta. Beta is the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. Beta is the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. In other words, the market portfolio is all of the stocks. If you held every stock in the world in proportion in your portfolio to its weight in the economy of the world, it's a theoretical animal. This is saying that in a well-diversified portfolio, Netflix is 67% as volatile as the market itself. That's what 0.67 means. So you can think of 1.00 as like the fulcrum. 1.00 would be market risk. So a stock that is above 1.00 would be probably riskier than the market portfolio. Stocks below it, now think of this. A treasury bill would have a beta of zero. It has no risk. It's risk-free. The market portfolio has a risk of 1.00. So every stock lies on this market lie. We find that when you're young, you should have a portfolio with betas, stock betas, that are more aggressive. Use aggressive. Because you can afford to take losses, you can recover. As you get older, we like to see your beta become more defensive, pulling back, because that's just the way it is. But the one thing, and we'll talk about this next week, is know yourself. What is your beta? Interestingly, a lot of young people these days, we find in financial planning, and this is financial planning part of it, is you guys are a lot more defensive than I would have found people your age in like the 80s or the 90s. Then I would have said, what's your bait? And I would have had people your age say 1.2, 1.3. A lot of people these days, if I ask you, you would say like 0.8, 0.7. You're more defensive these days than you were, which in a way is kind of good because the market is a lot riskier now than it was in the past. And we'll get into that as time goes along. But notice that you also have these other numbers, and I'll be talking about these next week. But now you've seen your first stock screens. Well, maybe some of you have already done this stuff, but I'm trying to show you how we do this. This is quick and dirty stuff. I mean, my God, if you're really serious, you're not going to go to a place called Yahoo for your financial information. But for quick, dirty information for this kind of stuff, yeah, this is fine. It's just that if you want to dig deeper, go to Edgar. If you want to go deeper also, you might want to look, you have access to Standard & Poor's Net Advantage. As students here, if you weren't students here, that would cost you a fortune. You can go in and look at Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, see massive analyses of companies. You can go to Hoover's and see their analysis of companies. So you got all these resources, and I'll be showing you these over the next weeks. So you're going to come out of here being ready to do something more than just major in some subject like accounting.